listening to another Netcast production brought to you by the Fancy Pants Gangsters at fancypantsgangsters.com. Because those who can, do. Those who cannot, do it on the internet.
Welcome to Blogulator Radio. It's episode 7, and my name is Chris. I'm here with somebody that has yet to be on our podcast here, all about TV, fawning over and skewering the best of the boob tube. His name's Sam. He's actually a writer for theblogulator.com, the written version of this podcast, which you can find at, like I said, theblogulator.com. Thanks to Fancy Pants Gangsters for once again having us on their network, and we are here to talk about a show that somehow we've gone 6 episodes now without discussing, even though it's covered almost every week on our website. The reason Sam seems to have a passion for writing about pop culture, it's Glee. So Sam, first of all, thanks for coming.
Yeah, no problem.
So I haven't watched Glee since maybe the 7th or 8th episode of the first season. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's kind of hard to be a television fanatic without finding out tons of stuff about it online. So I was Glee wikiing a lot of the different characters that have showed up.
Right.
And one of the last characters I actually remember meeting, like one of the newer characters, is Jesse St. James. And yeah. I heard he came back on the most recent episode.
Yeah, and it was really awful, actually.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that, because he was one of the reasons I stopped watching the show.
Oh, yeah. No, he made his triumphant return this week for no reason that is apparent to me. But yeah, he actually came in, just appeared randomly singing Running in the Deep by Adele. And it was the worst version of that song that I have ever heard.
See how I leave with every piece of you. Don't underestimate the things that I will do.
He came in singing just so much vibrato and so much like, I'm the star of Rent singing this song, that it just really didn't work, and I actually had to mute it before I could finish it.
So why did they bring this character back, or why did they want us to believe they brought the character back?
He wants to redeem himself for hurting Rachel, because, you know, he dated her basically just to get close to her so that he could ruin the team, because he was actually in the competing team. But he came back because he flunked out of college and actually feels bad about what he did to her. So he's trying to redeem himself. I don't know if he's going to continue being on the show, but I am hoping he won't be.
Yeah, that's probably for the best. So did this cause any tension with the Finn love triangle or anything?
Yeah, it did, actually. It was the prom episode. So Finn went with Quinn, but then got into a fight with Jesse St. James over how he treated Rachel and got kicked out of the prom. So I don't know if they're going to keep doing that. I assume they brought him back to stir things up so that he can actually get back with Rachel, because everyone wants that to happen. Quinn is just too mean sometimes, you know?
Right.
And we really want to see the two stars get together.
It's the ultimate will they, won't they, right?
Right.
So you stuck with the show. You watch it since the beginning?
Yeah, okay. Every episode.
Well, first of all, I commend you on that.
Thank you.
Because obviously you have as much qualms with the show as you keep watching it as you do things that you like, correct?
Yes, I do.
So let's say, you know, Fantasyland, you were here to convince me to come back and watch the show. Do you think that there's reason for me to do that? Especially coming up on the season finale of season 2.
Yeah, I do. Actually, I've been thinking about it, and I think that a lot of people stopped watching probably around the same time that you did, towards the end of the first season, and then maybe thought, you know, or thought, you know, I'll give them a few episodes in the beginning of the second season to see if they can pull it back. And the first few episodes of the second season were awful. You know, they got into like all of their theme shows, and the plot itself took a backseat to, you know, putting on spectacles of Britney Spears or Madonna. But the show has really come into its own lately. They've gotten a much wider depth of music, and they realized that, you know, instead of just seeing teenagers singing, we want to see teenagers that have personality traits and things that we know about them singing. So they've definitely been developing characters, and they've brought in characters that are really funny. So the show itself is hilarious. I laugh out loud at least like 6 or 8 times an episode. So I think that if you're gonna, you should give it a try again. I think that Glee should really get a second chance. And it's not the beginning, you know, it's not like Don't Stop Believing, everyone is feeling really awesome about everything, but the songs fit more well into the plot line. And so it's just a more solid show. It's not as volatile as it used to be.
Okay. So here was my big... I think you mentioned some things that made me stop watching this show. My biggest problem was their inconsistency with character arcs, mm-hmm. where it was like they'd give you tons of really like dramatic and interesting stuff about a character, and then all of a sudden they'd pull away from it and you'd forget what that character was doing. I'm thinking specifically that Will They, Won't They of Will Schuster and... what's her name? Big Eyes.
Emma,
there you go. and that they seem to like come back to that basically whenever the writers wanted to, and it wasn't based on any kind of real journey for the characters or anything like that. And so do you think that they ironed that thing out, where it's like they actually focus on something and they don't let the music distract them, they don't let the bigness of the show distract them?
Yeah, I think that it's toned itself down in that way. It's a huge cast, so it's hard to focus on specific characters in every episode. But for example, in the last episode, the prom episode, the first song was 10 minutes into the episode. And before that, it was just all addressing these issues that have been brought up throughout the season. They did have a tendency to just let things kind of slowly die in the last season as they found their way. I mean, they had two characters that didn't have names in the Glee Club for the first season. So, yeah. But they've definitely... It's definitely gotten much better about that. Emma and Will are still trying to get together, and they don't focus on it every episode, but it's still running through, and they've actually devoted much more time to it lately than they have been in the past. And, it's more fine-tuned, you know? Like, it was clunky in the beginning, but it's definitely working its way towards being a show with characters that you know the stories of and that they don't just, like, let die because it doesn't really matter.
Right. One of the things you've actually mentioned on your posts is that they have yet to figure out is how to work in Will's wife? Ex-wife now?
Yeah, ex-wife.
I don't know her name. I just know her as Gina from Nip Tuck.
No, she's Terry.
Terry on the show. There you go. Yeah. She's still popping back up to be evil for no reason?
Yeah, every once in a while. I think she's done now, officially.
Hooray.
So that's good. Yeah, that was a mistake to bring her back, just because it's not that you like watch the show and you're like, oh god, I really hate her, this is so much fun. It's like, no, she's just really annoying, and she needs to get away from here.
Yeah. So I mean, they bring back like people like Terry or Jesse St. James seemingly randomly, but you think like if you had to pick like a core group of characters on the show that you think they have done a good job focusing and fine tuning over season two, who would they be?
Actually, probably not the main characters. Finn and Quinn and Rachel have had their little love triangle, but that's not the most interesting part of the show anymore. It's definitely mostly about Kurt and Blaine. And then Santana, Brittany, and Sam actually have been really interesting this season.
And Sam's one of the new season two characters, right?
Yeah, okay. And they haven't done a lot with him lately, but just the way that those characters are growing in interesting ways, because last season, you know, they didn't really talk that much, and you know, Santana was just the mean one, and Brittany was just the dumb one.
Right.
But ever since this season, they've just added so much more depth to those characters that it's actually kind of outshining the characters that we're used to, like Mercedes and Rachel and Finn.
Mm-hmm. So what is it about... First of all, why would the supporting characters be the ones that they seem to be focusing on more? Do you think that there's been like a fan response to this that makes them want to focus on people like Kurt and Santana?
Yeah, I think that there's definitely, I mean, the gay community is all about Glee, so it makes sense that they would have a really positive gay relationship on it. Especially because it's interesting that Kurt is such a young gay, but he, that is definitely representative of the older gay culture. You know, he's very into clothes and very effeminate and love show tunes, but he's young and he doesn't know what's going on. So it's interesting to see a gay character that's that young that isn't just trying to be straight, you know? So I think that people are really enjoying watching that. And then to have Blaine there, who's just perfect, has absolutely no flaws, and that to have a relationship that's healthy, or that's that healthy and homosexual, is really great.
Mm-hmm. Whereas Santana's now still dealing with an in-the-closet type thing, right?
Yeah, which is really interesting, actually, that because there were moments where she would be kissing Brittany, and we'd we were like, what's going on with that? Are they just kissing because they want to? But to have Santana actually be like, no, I think I'm actually a lesbian, and to go through not wanting to come out, but at the same time being, you know, really full of herself and really into herself makes her a really interesting character, I think.
So here's something that I've read about a criticism, and maybe you'd have a challenge against it. One of both, I know Qualler likes him a lot, and so do I, TV critic of Todd Vanderwerf of the Undian's TV Club, often talks about how he enjoys, once again, that Kurt is a positive role model for the gay community, and especially for gay kids in high school struggling with being accepted and so on. But so much so that it sometimes ends up him being painted as a saint, where it's like he can get through anything, any of the bullying, any of the torturing, and ultimately ends up on top. And that basically he's like a perfect person. And mm-hmm. is that a good thing to try to portray on screen when, I mean, obviously, especially for dramatic purposes and realisticness purposes, is that the best healthy way to portray a gay character on screen?
Yeah, and I think that's actually one of my main criticisms of the Kurt storyline. Is that, you know, sometimes Kurt tries to get away with things and people don't call him out on it. Like in the last episode, the bully, who we know is gay, is prom king, and Kurt becomes prom queen through an act of, you know, people ganging up on him. But he owns it and he accepts it, and he tries to get the bully to come out and dance with him.
Because he's possibly in the closet too, right?
He is in the closet.
Okay, so I made that clear.
Yep, and so... you know, when that happened, I feel like the show was trying to make you feel like the bully should have come out and been like, that would have been the way that we wanted it to happen, and he didn't. But you know, my response was that was completely unfair of Kurt to ask him to do that. Mm-hmm. I think that Kurt paints himself too much as the victim sometimes, and that isn't really cool. But I also feel like the way that the show has handled the bullying situation and has demonstrated that, you know, it doesn't just die off. You know, you can't win everyone over through song and dance, that the bullies are always going to be there. It's really helpful. You know, painting Kurt as someone who is saint-like and really has it together and knows what he wants and knows what he's doing and still, you know, had to transfer schools because he got bullied so much and still, you know, faces that kind of prank at his junior prom addresses the fact that bullying can't just be solved by being awesome and being yourself and being perfect. It's a systematic thing that every gay kid is going to have to face at some point.
Right. Right. Okay. I'm down with that. I think it sounds a lot more interesting when you're actually talking about the show, whereas when you're watching it, it just is bright colors and
there's a lot of spectacle.
Right. Exactly. So what are we building towards for the end of season two? Is there a big nationals?
Yeah, they're heading towards nationals in New York. I assume the way that Glee has been going lately, you know, the first year they got to regionals and then lost, and this year they got to regionals and won, so they're going to nationals. So I assume that at nationals they're probably going to lose this year, and then get to nationals again next year and then win.
And win, yeah. Somebody's been watching Friday Night Lights, I think, as far as the state championship end of season things go on that show.
But it should be interesting. They haven't really let on about anything that's going to be happening there. They haven't talked about what songs they're going to sing or what they're going to do, so it should be a really fun episode, I think, with a lot of... I don't know if they're going to be doing original songs again or if they're going to just be doing covers of songs, but I'm pretty excited to see the competitions, because competitions are always fun because there are just so many songs in them.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why I kept going with the show as long as I did. It got to the point where I was like, I was just waiting for the songs to happen. And because I got so dismissive of the character arcs problems and things like that. So, I don't know, maybe I'll tune in. I want to say thanks to Sam for joining me on Blog Later Podcast. Will you come back and tell us about season 3?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and that probably won't happen though until this fall, or are they going to wait until Super Bowl again?
No, they'll do it next fall, I think.
All right, cool. We'll have you on sooner than later. And but in the meantime, you can catch Sam's coverage of the end of Glee Season 2 on Fox at theblogulator.com. This has been Chris for Blogulator Radio on the Fancy Pants Gangsters Network. Thanks again, Sam.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, we could have had it all. Rolling in the deep.
You had my heart inside your hand.
And we're back for the second half of Blogulator Radio, episode number 7. I'm Chris, and with me, once again, is my wife, Jerxica. How's
it going? Hello.
So, Jerx and I usually tend to talk about competitive reality television, and we'd like to touch on that, albeit briefly, for this episode, because also, believe it or not, we also watch actually good programming together. And two of our favorite shows, 30 Rock and Community, recently had their season finales, so we'd like to just do a kind of recap of the latest seasons and finales of those two NBC Thursday night sitcoms as well. But first, let's get it out of the way. I know you've got some pent-up excitement and maybe a tiny bit of rage over the latest American Idol proceedings, as well as The Voice and their new and improved battle rounds for the
NBC. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing.
Give our listeners a rundown of what the new rounds of The Voice are like, in which there's literally a boxing ring in the middle of a studio.
Well, that was pretty much it. But
that's it.
Yeah, but I mean for a show that already has eye-bleedingly complicated rules, they really stepped it up a notch with the battle rounds. So we talked last time, I think, about the Joaches on The Voice, and they're in full force now with 8 contestants on each of their teams, and they have to winnow it down to 4. But they're only getting through 4 battles, like 1 battle per Joach in each episode. So I feel like the show's stalled a little bit, because even though it's grown in ridiculousness in terms of like showmanship per episode, they're really going to make us wait forever until we actually get to the call-in portion, which is the successful model that American Idol is based on. But yes, they do. They set up a boxing ring and have 2 contestants sing what we thought was going to be the same song at the same time.
Yeah, just and literally just like balls out. You sing it in the left side of the ring, you sing it on the right side of the ring, and we'll pretend we knew which one sung it better.
And it turned out to be duets, which honestly I was a little disappointed by, because you were so angry when you thought it was just an all-out sing-out brawl.
Right, because that wouldn't make any sense. However, I was still pleasantly surprised, because what they tried to do were duets. And yes, at points throughout the songs, there were genuine moments of actually sounding like a decent cover. But for the most part, you still have 2 singers trying to sing a quote-unquote duet, but also trying to out-sing each other.
It was amazing.
They get more attention from the Joaches.
It was an unbelievable case study of human nature at its worst. It was so fantastic.
There's a pretty fantastic scene where they're preparing for the battle round, and they do a rehearsal inside the ring, and Frenchie Davis, former American Idol contestant, and What's-Her-Face Magoo.
Tara Lynn.
Oh, you remember her name.
That's
fantastic.
All I remember. Tara Lynn.
Tuesday's like an
with
eon.
The eyeshadow.
Tuesday's like forever ago for me. But they're both in the ring preparing, and Christina Aguilera is there trying to kind of give them some guidance on how to actually perform a duet collaboratively and cooperatively. But obviously she has like this huge realization. She's like, oh, crap. What did I do? This show is terrible. I'm trying to give them guidance and sing well.
See the wheels turning.
But they clearly like want each other to die like right there and then.
Well, that's what I'm hoping for next week, right? Because they've really got to step it up each week. So the ridiculousness of just having the boxing ring is going to be worn off. So I'm really hoping that the next round of contestants in the battle rounds will just end up like shanking each other in the ring.
that very well may be. And our own Tim Mahoney of Minneapolis was one of the ones that went home
in
the first battle round.
That's true. Deserved, though, honestly.
Who did he go up against?
My city of mountains.
Doesn't even matter. The volleyball, the 18-year-old from Florida.
The ex-volleyball. Yes. You know, I actually liked him better than the volleyball girl.
Well, I mean, it's a better of two evils, I guess.
I mean, he would eventually get eliminated anyway, I think. But that is one thing I kind of hate about the show is they're trying to be the, oh, anybody can be a contestant and let the older people, this Tim Honey guy is a 40-some-year-old local musician here in Minneapolis. Decent guy, decent songwriter, decent singer, but clearly, like, after throughout the initial stages, they're going to go for the young, pretty things.
Well, now that they know who's hot, it changes. Wouldn't that be a great show, though, if they had to do the whole voting round where America could see the contestants, but then the judges kind of weighed in, and they didn't get to see what who anybody looked like until the end?
That would make for a much more understandable and interesting radio show, I think. But nobody listens to the radio.
No, but America could see them.
Oh, so America would see it, and we just, like, see them.
Right, and then the judges would just, like, cry and be, like, really shocked because they wouldn't understand why people were getting kicked off.
I would be down with that.
It would also be more entertaining if some of the contestants were, like, actually grotesque.
Yeah, but then we wouldn't get to see CeeLo and Adam Levine be inappropriate towards the younger.
You don't think they'd be pervy, even if they could
just
see
on their
people?
Voices? I guess so.
They'd be pervy in a bread box, pretty much. Like, it wouldn't matter.
It's probably true.
They probably talk to inanimate objects in their house, like, how you doing?
And because Adam Levine thought Tim Mahoney originally was a girl, he'd probably be fantasizing.
He'd be all up on that.
Anyways, so that's The Voice. We'll continue watching the battle rounds, but you might not hear from us unless something astounding happens during the next 3 weeks until we finally get into the next section of The Voice, which... news tidbit, it's already been renewed. It's going to come back same time, January, February of next year, and it's basically NBC's big show, and they're planning on when it does come back that it's going to be the two-hour thing every week, not just the two-hour premiere and then 1 hour later on. So,
well, if you remember after the premiere on our local news show,
yes,
one of the news anchors actually decided to insert his own commentary and said it was the only good show that NBC has aired in years.
Yeah, that's our own Mike Pomeranz.
On the NBC affiliate.
American Idol also is dwindling down to a whisper of a close.
Oh, it's so painful.
It is pretty painful. So let's just recap really quickly, especially because one of your least favorite contestants, if not your least favorite,
I know.
James Durbin.
It almost restores my faith in humanity. And then I remember the battle rounds on The Voice.
James Durbin was eliminated on American Idol this week
per
America's request. And I think we're pretty okay with that.
Oh, it's fantastic. I can finally sleep a full like through the night now.
However, the week before that, which we didn't quite know by the time we recorded the last podcast where we talked about American Idol, one of our favorites, Jacob, was eliminated. And, you know, I was kind of over Jacob at that point because he clearly didn't know what to do besides be Queenie and sing big runs and things like that.
I wasn't aware there was... additional requirements to be awesome on American Idol, but
I
Chris Pauly, jackass.
I know, I enjoyed him. I think I still would have preferred him to win over anybody else, though I am liking Haley right
I know,
now in the top three.
I know. Of the top three, Haley's my girl.
She's the only interesting one.
I know.
But I'm pretty sure she'll probably get eliminated in the next episode.
It's true. Enough of that. It's boring.
Okay, so that's American Idol and The Voice. That's our obligatory recap of the competitive reality singing competition shows. I said competitive competition, which is redundant, but... let's move past that and pretend it didn't even happen. We actually want to focus our conversation tonight on two shows that we love dearly. And I don't know, how you were kind of hesitant to actually even talk about them, Jerks of Cub, because we don't get to be as snarky because we're actually talking about shows we enjoy.
True. But I also think the great thing about both of these shows is that they have such a seamless narrative. Like, throughout the year. I mean, not like a serial story or anything like that, but it's hard to remember one episode as opposed to another because it's just every week has been really, really good.
Yeah, and the shows, once again, we're talking about are 30 Rock and Community, also on NBC, in addition to The Voice. Also both renewed, so few, at least The Voice isn't knocking down scripted programming, which... tends to be the actual quality stuff on TV nowadays. But you're right, the narratives of both shows, especially with Community second season and 30 Rock's latest season, I actually can't remember off the top of my head if they're on number 5 or 6. I think it's 5. But they had a slump, I think, last year.
Well, you kind of gave up on 30 Rock for a little
while. Last year, it was a bit where I was like not caring very much. And I kind of watched it out of habit, which is what I did with The Office for a long time until I finally gave up on it. And but I'm glad I stuck around because this year 30 Rock has definitely been consistent and both quality wise and narrative wise as well. I mean, the stories have felt a lot more fluid and felt a lot less just, you know, zany pop-ups, which is what
I think they went for a lot last season where it was just kind of like, let's come up with a wacky idea and then there's no like continuation of the characters' arcs or relationships.
They've still had zany pop-ups.
Oh, yeah.
But they've been really well
integrated.
Yeah. So like Malcolm Jamal Warner on Community.
Right. And well, that's why it's almost as if I feel like there's some kind of magnetic pull between these shows where Community... It's, once again, kind of rough start at the beginning
like
of that
love
season
story.
One. Yeah. And I know Community's real kind of crush is Cougar Town, since they name drop it all the time. Another show, another favorite of ours, who is having a really good season right now. But since they're on the same night, same network, I think Community kind of off to the wrong step on its first few episodes of season one. It finally got it. Figured out its own voice, changed the Troy character a little bit, put Troy and Abed together as a pair, made Chevy Chase's Pierce character a little different, a little more mean-spirited, and that actually ended up working for it, especially in season two, when after the success of season one's Modern Warfare, the paintball episode, which everybody seems to have already decided is going to like go down in history as one of the best episodes ever. It is. And they come back to it now, and it doesn't feel like they're just trying to recapitalize on the... on the success of the first one. It feels genuine.
It does. It's almost like the NBC was finally like, okay, guys, you're right. Just do what you want.
Yeah.
You know, like they were too restrained the first season and like there were some really breakout funny moments in the first season of Community. But I also feel like they fell back on some of the comedy, type of comedy that doesn't really work on other shows on that network, like Outsourced. You know?
Oh yeah, and
so like it got to a much smarter place.
Oh yeah, it did. It stopped worrying about like the differences between the different ethnicities and cliques and stereotypes that the different characters represented, and actually gave the characters their own personalities. Plus, ended up riffing a lot more on pop culture homage and montage and things like that. That ended up giving it a. I mean, admittedly, like sometimes those jokes come quickly and easily. 30 Rock, I think, has been once again shown that over the years. But what matters more is that they're able to do that in conjunction with telling us stories where the characters seem to actually matter. And I think one of my favorite episodes of the season, actually one of my favorite episodes of 2011 so far, is the Community episode Critical Film Studies, where Abed takes not Joel, Joel McHale's character
Jeff Winger,
out to dinner. And Jeff's trying to get him to go to this Pulp Fiction party in honor of Abed's birthday, and Abed turns out to actually like have a really like long monologue about traveling to the set of Cougar Town, once again coming back to that, and how he had this great moment of epiphany. And it's a really hilarious pop culture joke, but it also doubles as this really kind of insightful take on somebody who is so obsessed with pop culture that they can't help but see themselves without.
My lips started trembling, my hands and my feet went numb, my knees buckled, and as I fell to the floor, I pooped my pants. I did.
I'm surprised you liked that. It didn't hit a little too close to home for you?
Oh, it totally hit close to home, and I was a wreck the 24 hours after I watched it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But I also thought it was really hilarious and touching, and it's really hard to gain that balance, I think, as a sitcom.
I missed like half of the references in that episode, being a Tarantino detractor.
Well, and then it turns out halfway through that it's not a Pulp Fiction episode. It's more a My Dinner with Andre episode.
Right,
another movie you hadn't seen.
Correct, yeah.
But I mean, it's still for you, somebody that doesn't get some of the references, you still thoroughly enjoy the show, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about the finale. I know that, unfortunately, it's not because it was boring, but you fell asleep halfway through this part two of the paintball.
It's because you can stop yourself from watching it past 10 o'clock, and, you know, I'm old now, so I can't handle it.
We were trying to go through the whole double finale on Hulu at, like, 1 in the morning, and eventually your body gave up. And that's okay.
Well, and that's interesting you said it was the second episode of the finale, it was a continued finale.
It was.
And I actually thought when they showed clips for the to-be-continued episode on the first one, that was like a joke.
Right.
That was the season finale, and there was no continued episode.
There would be no resolution.
Right. Which I still think would have been genius and hilarious. But you would have missed out on that last glorious shining moment of the season.
Which had cameo appearances from Busy Phillips and Dan Bird of Cougar Town once again.
Yes.
pretty amazing stuff. But I think you maybe thought that because of the clip show episode they had a few weeks ago where they had
fake clips,
the
right.
Fake clip show where it was like, hey guys, you remember we were in that haunted old West town and they'd show a clip that was not from a previous episode.
I think that was my favorite episode of the season.
It was a pretty amazing episode. And especially because I think it's hilarious that they just overblew their budget for NBC because NBC finally gave them the reins to do whatever they want. And they're like, all right, we're going to make a fake clip show with like old West outfits, a ghost story, a mental hospital.
Do you think the dynamic, right before we started recording this, you told me that NBC's not doing the black comedy schedule next year. And I'm just wondering if the dynamic's going to change.
It might. We'll talk more about this in detail on future Blog of the Dorado episodes. But the upfronts have been are happening. NBC's the first one to actually announce the schedule in advance of them. And NBC shows us that Thursday night will no longer be a three-hour comedy block, which is what they toyed with this past season. They're going to go back to the original 2 hours of comedy and then an hour-long drama. Then they're going to that hour-long drama that will take away the place of both Outsourced and Polarizer / Perfect Couples / 30 Rock will be Prime Suspect, a remake of a BBC series. So it'll be interesting because I think there definitely has been a more loose and wacky vibe now that when they tried this three-hour block, and while it involved the presence of a show like Outsourced, which I think we both agree is one of the worst things that NBC's ever produced.
It's one of the worst things that television has ever produced. Humanity has ever produced.
Even with its presence there, I still kind of liked that they were just like, okay, screw it. We're going to try 3 hours of comedy. Yeah. And for the most part, I mean, I was excited about it.
But we never watched it on television.
No.
We always watched it afterwards, so...
So why did it matter?
But that's why I think maybe the whole dynamic of the individual shows could change.
Yeah, and I think so too. And we'll talk more about like the finales of Parks and Rec and The Office in the future. Sorry about that cat on the keyboard. I think that part of their placement there is also helpful to the dynamic between both 30 Rock and Community. But ultimately, at the end, I think we were both very satisfied with the way that 30 Rock and Community ended up. Was there any down notes in either of those shows towards the end of the season?
I don't think so.
I feel like it's a lot harder to talk about the faults of a comedy versus a drama,
right?
Because if it makes you laugh, you're going to forgive it for its faults.
Yeah.
And I think that while 30 Rock did a lot better this season than it did last year, there were still a couple beats that felt awkward or recycled sometimes, especially with some of the Tracy and Jenna stuff, because they're the stock wacky characters.
That's true, but I feel like I always laugh out loud at those shows at least once in every episode.
Yeah, and there's enough like density of jokes per minute that it doesn't really matter if 1 minute you're like, meh, that Jenna joke was a little lame, because the next 30 seconds there'll be a good one.
Well, and they utilized a lot of comedy of errors plots
this
season,
enjoy.
Which I'm, you know, just a slave to. So I'm a sucker for that and physical comedy. So
I'm a sucker for cameos. And so when Michael Keaton showed up on the episode where they have the gas leak in the studio.
Yes.
I know it was kind of... some critics have said that it was a lame attempt to give the characters a reason to act goofy and drunk, but I enjoyed it because Michael Keaton was there and he got to say things like, I'm getting tired of this shh sound that this pipe keeps making.
Yeah. Well, and what kind of excuse is there for the characters to act drunk and silly that's not lame? I mean, I think
that's
what that episode needed in order for the comedy of errors to unfold.
Very true, very true. And we got to see Jack Donaghy and his three different versions of himself, past, present, and future, which was pretty entertaining.
And Dennis was back.
Always good to see Dennis. Blanking on the actor's name, but he's always
you
hilarious.
Would, dummy.
Good one. So all in all, 30 Rock and Community very satisfied with their seasons this year and looking forward to seeing them again next year. It felt good to talk about some scripted programming that actually
it's good for the soul.
Yeah. You can only take so much snark about reality TV.
It's true.
But I'm still happy about watching The Voice this Tuesday.
Ugh, I can't wait.
I felt like a weird kind of throw up-y feeling in my stomach when we said that. But
I kind of wanted to put it on my Google Calendar, like to plan it out for the next week. And then I stopped myself. I thought that was crossing a line. But
you win, NBC.
I'll tune in on live television even. I won't even wait for it to go on Hulu.
Okay. Well, that's a sad note to end this episode of the Blog Iterative podcast on, but
I am an inspiration.
Let's end with our catchphrase, if you would join me, Jerksica. And it is 1, 2, 3, because our opinions are valued. No, valid. Not valued. We don't care who values them. They're valid. Okay? Do you got it?
I'll try.
Bollygator Radio on Fancy Pants Gangsters Network. Join us next week when we talk about Upfront's new shows in development and coming this fall to your boob tube.